Under a proposed 10-year plan announced last week, the U.S. Postal Service would raise rates, see longer delivery times for some first-class mail, and play a bigger role in the package delivery business. The USPS also aims to find savings of about $160 billion. The plan has already gotten some pushback in Congress, but Postmaster General Louis DeJoy defended it as a realistic way to maintain service at a time when Americans are sending less mail. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the potential for some slower long-distance mail delivery or higher rates in the future? Do you think it's important for the Postal Service to at least get close to breaking even financially? Do you count on the mail for a regular basis for yourself or for your business? Do you work for the Postal Service? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jacob Bogage is a business reporter covering the U.S. Postal Service for The Washington Post. Jacob, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you.
Before we dig into this plan, Jacob, can you give us a sense of the financial position that the Postal Service is in right now?
Bad. Is the way I would describe it. The Postmaster General's plan is to make up for $160 billion in the next 10 years. And that's for one main reason, which is we're all sending less mail. Sending tens of billions of pieces fewer now than we did in 2008, and I'm looking at the numbers in front of me here, I just pulled them up. We sent 92 billion pieces of first-class mail as a country in 2008. We sent 53 billion in 2020. That's how the Postal Service makes its money. It doesn't get money from taxpayers. It makes money from the sale of postal products and the folks who use the Postal Service. If we're not sending mail, the agency can't make money. It can't support this large unionized workforce. And it makes it more difficult for them to maintain their infrastructure, which is all over the country to serve all of us. And so that's the root of their financial issues.
Let's look at some of the changes in this proposal. First of all, some changes in the service commitments when mail arrives. Can you talk through what that commitment is now, what would change under this plan, and why it would save money?
Sure. So let's talk about what the Postal Service is supposed to do rather than what it actually does. So no matter where you live in the country and where you're sending mail, it should reach its destination in 1 to 3 days. Under the new standards, 70% of that first class mail is still going to take 1 to 3 days. If we've got to go more than 930 miles, it'll take 4 days. If we've got to go more than 1,900 miles, it'll take 5 days. So for that last 30% and change of the first-class mail that's being sent, so that's mail that's coast-to-coast or going to Hawaii or Alaska from the mainland or Puerto Rico, we're going to take some more time to deliver that mail.
And
what this is...
Okay.
I'm sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
The savings there, as I understand it from your reporting, is that mail that's going a long way. If I'm the Postal Service, now I could put that letter on a truck instead of on a plane, and trucks are cheaper than planes. Do I have that maybe oversimplified, but about right?
No, you do have that right. You absolutely have that right. I mean, what I was going to say, and this is fits right in, is that these new, what we call them service standards, these new service standards, or just an acknowledgement from the Postal Service that, look, we haven't been delivering your mail in the time frame we're supposed to do it in a long time. So we're just going to make things more realistic. We can't go from New York to Los Angeles in 3 days unless we're going to put mail on a plane. And even then, we still might not make it on time because we're having problems with our network. So we're going to tell you, we're going to change your expectation. It's going to be 4 days or it's going to be 5 days now. And in so doing, they're also hoping that's going to save them some money by not having to lease space on cargo flights or charter planes themselves.
Then some cost increases for the mail we send and for packages. What is in the plan?
We really don't know, actually. And this is the part that for all the folks that I talk to in the mailing industry really gets them ripping their hair out, because the Postal Service has the authority to raise postage rates 9% per product. So that means your package is going to cost 9% more. Your stamp is going to cost 9% more. You're getting your newspaper delivered if you get it through the mail, 9% more, things like that, which means a lot of those prices are going to be pushed to the consumer. Instead, you know, if you buy something from Etsy and it costs more to ship, your Etsy vendor is not going to swallow that cost. They're going to pass that cost off to you to get it to you. But the Postal Service, and I had an interview with the Postmaster General, mm-hmm. won't say how much they're going to actually raise prices by. They have the authority to do it up to 9%. They won't say if they're going to use all 9% or less. So that'll be something that we learn at some point this summer.
We're talking to Jacob Bogage, business reporter with the Washington Post, about a new plan from the U.S. Postal Service. Not a done deal yet, but a 10-year proposal to raise revenues, cut costs, and make some other changes. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Jack joins us now in Lafarge. Jack, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm listening to this, and I want the person to address this. The guy who's running the post office is a Trumper, and he's anti-union. And we know that back in the, I don't know, it was 2008, 2007, the Republicans made a mandate that they pay pensions out for 70 years, doubling things. And what it does, it has been making the post office, how you call it, not competitive. And therefore, all these things that they've been doing have been making it non-competitive to bust the union. And this has been going on for how many years? And it's
Jack,
not really that they're running deficits.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. So, Jacob, let's start with that point about the pension funding that is, I think, one element of this plan. Can you talk about that situation that Jack's referring to?
Yeah, what Jack's talking about is the Postal Service. He got the year right, too. 2006 law that kind of remade their finances requires the Postal Service to pay its retirees' health care costs up front instead of paying by year as those costs incur, and it cost them about $5 billion a year. Now, here's the catch. The Postal Service hasn't made those payments in a decade. So when you look at the Postal Service's balance sheet, it looks really ugly. Like, we're talking about 2020, they lost $9.2 billion a year. Looks really ugly. Half of that is from the retiree health care funding, and they didn't pay it. So it looks really bad, but they haven't had actually any cash going out the door. So when we talk about the structural problems for the Postal Service, a lot of people like to talk to me about the retirement healthcare pre-funding. And yeah, that's a big issue. And getting that obligation taken care of would help a lot of people who run the Postal Service sleep easier. But that is not the biggest problem facing the Postal Service, for the main reason that they don't even pay that money. And the Treasury and Congress doesn't even hold them accountable for that money. They know they're not good for it.
And our caller referred to Louis DeJoy, who you talked to recently, a Trump appointee, and was under a lot of political fire for changes he made, instigated last year, concerns about delivery of the mail during the elections last year and the holidays. And then can you talk about calls to replace him and why that might be harder to do than some normal presidential appointees?
Yeah, that's because for all intents and purposes, for a lot of people that I talk to, Louis DeJoy is a Trump appointee. He actually wasn't. He was appointed by the bipartisan Board of Governors from the Postal Service. But all of the members of the Board of Governors, even though some are Democrats, were appointed by President Trump. President Trump and then Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, leveraged the Postal Service's finances. They basically said, we'll let you go bankrupt. We'll make sure you can't pay your employees or deliver the mail unless you hire the guy we want you to hire. President Biden doesn't want to play that game. He wants to run the agency, you know, more above board, as some of my sources have told me. So he doesn't have as much leverage or doesn't want to use the same kind of potentially improper tools to reshape the leadership of the Postal Service. And so that requires him to work with the Senate to get more governors confirmed to the Board of Governors. He already has three nominees. Their hearings will probably be at the end of April. That's where, if there is a push to remove Louis DeJoy, it'll have to come from them. It can't really come from Congress, and it can't come from the president.
We're talking to Jacob Bogage right now, Washington Post reporter covering the U.S. Postal Service, looking at the proposed 10-year plan that could save $160 billion over a decade. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of these changes? Would you be willing to pay a little more for stamps for the occasional mail that you send? Or if you're in a business that involves sending lots of mail and packages through the Postal Service, what would that mean to you? How about less commitment to shorter delivery times, especially at longer distances? Do you work for the Postal Service yourself? Love to hear your perspective. 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Jacob Bogage, Washington Post reporter covering the U.S. Postal Service, about a new 10-year plan from that agency, some slower delivery time commitments, higher rates, among other changes. We'll go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with Philip calling from Eau Claire. Philip, hi.
Hello, how's it going today?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Philip?
Well, I used to be a reporter, and years ago I was doing research on the post office, and I'm not going to go into all of it. But the question that I have always raised in situations like this, they say that they're losing X amount of dollars per year. The point they never make, though, is how much are they actually making in profit? Because I know there was one year the post office had said they were going to be losing like $1 to $2 billion in revenue, but yet they were still making over $10 billion in profit. To me, that's a little misleading.
Philip, thanks for the call. Is it a situation in recent years, at least, Jacob, where the Postal Service has been seen declining revenues but has still come out ahead of the game with some profit?
Yeah. No, that has not been the case, and they haven't turned a profit since 2006. I mean, they're in a tough situation where, as mail volumes decline, their costs are still high because they have a huge workforce, 644,000 people, 500,000 when unionized. They have to pay into pensions and healthcare funds that we talked about just a minute ago, and they have the sprawling national infrastructure, which is great for the individual consumers and businesses and folks who get their prescriptions in the mail. And, you know, there's a lot of people who need that infrastructure, but it costs a lot to maintain. And that has kept them from turning the profit.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Sean next in Stanley. Sean, hi.
Hi. I guess I was kind of wondering if there had ever been a consideration or an option to treat the U.S. Postal Service the same way we treat police and fire, where there's potentially like a municipal or city or state tax that maybe doesn't fund it completely, but helps shore it up, you know, especially with, you know, mail-in ballots being an issue, it would be a good way to make sure it's a safe, secure system.
Sean, thanks a lot for the call. So in effect, treat the Postal Service like any other government agency that you don't expect to break even on its own terms, Jacob. Is there talk of that?
Yeah, there it is. And I'm going to answer this Sean's question, which is a great question, in two ways. The really nerdy answer is that the Constitution gives the power to establish post offices and post roads specifically to Congress. And so it's a federal thing. Your town can't like run its own post office, for example. The larger question, and I think this was kind of the bulk of what Sean was asking about, was, should we just treat the post office like the federal, you know, any other federal agency? We don't expect our police to make a profit. We don't expect the Department of Defense or, the National Park Service to turn a profit, right? I mean, they're services. And that is the root of the question that the Postal Service is facing about its future. Right now, it is supported not by taxpayers, but by the sale of postal products. And it has to do that by, it's not a choice it's making, it has to do that by law. So does Congress, you know, if Congress wants to make changes to the Postal Service and wants it to be run like another federal agency, a service to the American people, is it willing to make that change and have us taxpayers support it? That's a question for your congressman.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234, talking about the future of the U.S. Postal Service, new 10-year plan out there. Jacob Bogage is with us from the Washington Post. Back to your calls now. Rick is with us in Rhinelander. Rick, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, throughout history, more or less, the urban postal patrons have subsidized the rural patrons because obviously it takes more money to bring a letter from New York City to North Dakota than it does across Manhattan. And what would be the consequence? And that is what I'm concerned about, the consequence of essentially cutting back on service and increasing costs. The rural recipients who have, you know, historically really been subsidized would take a big hit. And given I hate to use the word attitude of the postmaster, but he tends to favor private industry, I would say. I think it's a fair statement, as opposed to government services. If there is a drive to essentially make the post office non-competitive with, let's say, UPS or FedEx, you could end up in a situation where rural residents were in very serious problems getting their medications, voting by mail, whatever it is. I'd be interested in your comments.
Rick, thanks a lot for that call. A couple points there. Let's start with the main one, Jacob, the impact on rural America.
Well, first of all, I just want to commend your caller. That was just a wonderful and succinct description of a lot of the fears that people have and a lot of the things that I hear about in my reporting. Yes, I mean, the consequences of this 10-year plan, which I should say is not just service cuts, right? I mean, it's talking about opening installing new package sorting equipment, buying a new fleet of postal trucks. I mean, there is investment here. But in terms of service specifically, yes, the brunt of those impacts are going to be felt by folks in rural America who will essentially be paying the same amount for less service. Me sending a letter to my mom who lives a few miles away from me here in suburban Washington is not going to cost, the service standard, that's not going to change. For folks who live in rural areas, and Rick mentioned some great points, especially about folks getting their medications, especially veterans, and folks getting bills. I mean, I had a story a few weeks back about folks who are getting late fees and getting dinged on their credit scores because their bills aren't showing up on time. And now we're just going to add more days onto that service standard. Yes, the brunt of those impacts will be felt by people in rural America.
Our caller mentioned another point, competition with UPS and other package delivery. That's something we haven't gotten into, Jacob, that is part of this plan. Louis DeJoy, it sounds like, wants to get more of a share of the package market in the U.S. What's he talking about?
Yeah, and there's a good reason for that, which is that even before the pandemic, package volumes for the Postal Service were soaring. Again, 2008, the American people sent 3 billion packages through the Postal Service. In 2020, they sent 7 billion. 2020 was the first year that revenues, not profits, but revenues from packages exceeded revenues from first-class mail. That's huge. And so that tells you kind of where the Postal Service thinks the market's going. You know, talking to Louis DeJoy, they're projection is that package volume is going to increase 6 to 11% every year from now through 2025. That's going to be the backbone of the growth in revenue. And they want to be more competitive with FedEx and UPS and Amazon. That is a reasonable, logical place to expect growth. It's also kind of betting the farm for the Postal Service on things that are not mail. And they're going to have to improve their workflows, improve their network, and prove that they truly can compete at the same level that FedEx and UPS, and especially Amazon, can achieve.
A related point, we heard from Pat in Middleton who couldn't stay on the line. Pat says Amazon subcontracts to the USPS to deliver packages. If Amazon gets some overflow, USPS workers take shifts, get paid okay, and Pat thinks USPS doesn't charge Amazon enough, a decent price. Do you know about that? What's going on with Amazon and the Postal Service?
Yeah, that's a great point. Amazon does, Pat's right. Amazon does subcontract with the Postal Service because the Postal Service has this really great network and they go and deliver everywhere 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. And Amazon doesn't want to have to go over the hill and around the bend to deliver your, you know, container of dog food and paper towels. In terms of the pricing for those packages, by law for the Postal Service, have to be profitable. Each individual delivery has to be profitable. Not in the aggregate, each individual delivery. So to the extent that they're not charging express carriers enough, I mean, I guess that's a subjective term, but they are making money on every single package delivery. Could they be making more? Potentially, but if you are going to charge more, you're going to see less volume. And we've already seen Amazon's hired more than 100,000 people in 2020. They've hired the size of a small city, right? Not a small city, a large city to their workforce, specifically to build out their distribution network so they don't have to use the Postal Service. So you're playing with fire anytime you suggest you want to raise prices on these private express carriers, because you might drive away their business.
And Jacob, just in our last less than a minute now, what are you watching for next for the future of this 10-year plan?
I'm watching for the Senate confirmations of the three governors that to the Board of Governors that President Biden's nominated. I'm watching to see how much the Postal Service is going to raise prices. And I'm watching to see if package revenues stay up.
We'll leave it there. Jacob, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Rob.
Jacob Bogage is a reporter covering business in the U.S. Postal Service for The Washington Post. He talked with us today about the agency's 10-year plan proposed last week that could reduce some services with the goal of helping it financially break even by the end of the decade.